That warm, sunny weather that we all love and look forward to is right around the corner. So get outside instead of prepping and cooking indoors. I don't know about you all, but when the weather is nice, I just want to be doing more and prepping and worrying about my meals less, which is why I absolutely love Factor. Factor meals arrive fresh and ready to eat and are perfect for any active lifestyle. They have 45 weekly menu options so you can pick your gourmet meals that fit your goals. They have options like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, Keto, and more. Factor powers your day with satisfying breakfasts, on-the-go lunches, premium dinners, and guilt-free snacks and desserts. So it's easy to savor more this spring because Factor meals pack the flavor with none of the fuss. My mom and I have absolutely been loving having Factor in our lives. The meals are delicious and so easy to heat up and eat in no time at all. Especially since I'm not really that great in the kitchen, I love not having to worry about grocery shopping, about what to eat, about what's healthy. Factor has done it all for me. So get started at factormeals.com/barbknowsbest50off and use code barbknowsbest50off to get 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. That's code BARBKNOWSBEST50OFF at factormeals.com/BARBKNOWSBEST50OFF for 50% off plus free shipping. Hello, everyone. Hi, friends. Welcome back to Barb Knows Best, the podcast. It is me, Michelle, your co-host, and I have the privilege yet again of sitting across the table from my mother, Barb. And we've cooked up a really insightful, juicy conversation for you all this week, and I am so excited. Hello, Mom.
Hi, Michelle.
How you doing?
I am doing great.
Yes.
You're right. This is going to be a juicy conversation. I'm loving the depth of which these conversations are going each week. And I'm also loving that, as we know, everything that we talk about is from our own experience and things that we've learned that we want to share with all of you. But what's starting to happen more and more is you and I are getting more and more, I don't know, aware ourselves and more insightful ourselves. And every time something comes up, seems to be a major thing for us to talk about with our beautiful community here.
To bring to the show.
Yeah.
Content, pain into content.
Yes.
Dysfunction into insightful conversation.
Everything always goes back to that first sentence in The Road Less Traveled, life is difficult.
Do you want to repeat that for our listeners? Because I think it is quite powerful.
Yeah, I can definitely, I will summarize it for sure.
Sure. I'll put the exact quote in the show notes.
Yeah.
Take it away.
Well, I think the beauty of it is life is difficult and life no longer...
It's a truth that life is difficult.
Yes, life is difficult. This is a great truth. It is the greatest truth. And when we truly understand that life is difficult, it no longer matters. Because when we truly understand that life is difficult, the fact that life is difficult because we've actually get that, we experience difficulties in life, we can't change what life sends our way, it doesn't matter anymore because we're going to then empower ourselves. Right. To know that whatever life sends our way, we're going to be able to handle it in the best way that we possibly can in the moment. So that's my version and my little addition to what he says. And why that transformed my life over 40 years ago is that I thought once we got smart, once we got free,
of course,
once we had awareness is key, once we did all of the things that we needed to do, and I was recovering from bulimia back then life would no longer be difficult. I would actually be free from life being difficult. And I would no longer feel that life was difficult. Mm-hmm. But that is not true.
Right.
We are going to feel the difficulties of life. So I say all of this to say that we share all of our difficulties and all of our dysfunctions and all of the things with you. And I'm just really grateful to be here again with you, Michelle.
Yeah.
That was a long-winded thing.
I love it.
I think to start this episode, but it's so true. I'm glad you asked me to repeat that quote because it truly has saved my life.
Yeah. And it's impacted mine as well.
Yes.
Once I really took it in and believed it, it changed so much of how I approach life and view life and work through life. So I'm glad that you shared that with us again as we dive into this conversation today.
Well, one of the other things that I did a lot of reading, obviously, after I got out of treatment, which I've talked about, but one of the quotes that I really love that kind of goes hand in hand with this. It freed me. Mm-hmm. And it also made me feel not only settled and at ease a little bit with the difficulties and the sadness of life, it also gave it meaning and it made sense to me. Cause you know me, Michelle, I'm kind of a person that likes to understand.
Yeah.
And that was Carl Jung's quote, the word happy would lose its meaning if it were not balanced by sadness.
Mm.
And it's kind of a, you know, a deep quote, a heavy quote. I think it was for me when I read it, when I was studying around the books and teachings of Carl Jung, but it's true. Like we understand joy and pleasure so much more because we know that the flip side of it is, you know, sadness and suffering.
Right.
And I believe our biggest obstacle in life is thinking that we have to stop the suffering and only enjoy the sadness, where actually our biggest gains and freedoms in life are, can we just own the sadness or the suffering and not try to pile more onto it that will move us into the direction of awareness and happiness.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, episode over.
Thank you for joining. See you next week.
No, this is going to be good.
So after last week's conversation about over-apologizing or apologizing in times where it's not necessary, you and I ended the recording and kind of kept having a conversation that we felt should be a continuation for this episode today, because it's almost like an additional dynamic or a sister to this over-apologizing, kind of feeling like you have to be the fixer. And so if you identify, or if you're someone listening to this show and you feel like you are the fixer in your family or the peacekeeper in your life, or that you are someone who always kind of has to be on guard, ready to jump in, ready to smooth things over, ready to save the day, this conversation specifically is going to be for you. Because again, after rehashing, apologizing, and how that is a mechanism of keeping the peace, you and I realized, Mom, that there is another dynamic that's at play, especially for people who feel like they do have to be in that role. And, you know, I think specifically, but maybe not exclusively, this breeds from growing up in toxic dynamics or dysfunctional households, or even experiencing emotional or physical abuse, where you take on the role of the peacekeeper or the fixer. And a consequence of that is emotional monitoring, or being so in tune with your emotions and the emotions or energy of everyone around you that it becomes your job to be aware so that you can fix. And And I know that we talk about awareness, and especially awareness of our emotions, as a good thing. And of course it is. So today we wanted to differentiate where this dynamic becomes unhealthy or exhausting or energy draining. And then of course what we can do, as always, to try and release it and what to replace it with. But, you know, this concept of being the fixer, being the peacekeeper, being the person that has to be on guard is heavy. And I know you can relate to that, Mom, but I can too, in my own way. And in talking about freedom, you've mentioned freedom so often lately, especially in recent times from your trips and just really unpacking the last 30 plus years of your life, realizing this habit and starting to let it go does give out a new level of freedom and peace and ease. So yeah, I'm excited to talk about it.
Well, I think you've set this up beautifully, Michelle, because I never thought of it. It never occurred to me, which is so bizarre actually, that I was a fixer or a peacekeeper.
That's wild.
I know. Peacekeeper, yes, but fixer, I don't know. That word never occurred to me till recently. I think I came home from a retreat a couple years ago and I said, gosh, Michelle, you know what? I think I'm a fixer.
Mm-hmm.
And you laughed. So, but what always occurred to me, and so if fixer and peacekeeper doesn't quite, you know, feel like it fits for you, this might. What always occurred to me is I wanted to control things.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't, the chaos and the trauma and the difficulties and the abuse and all the burdens and all the things that I've talked about so often from my childhood just continued to boil over and continued to live with me, you know, for most of my life.
Right.
And it's only been through my practice and all the things that I've been able to kind of unfold all of this and look at it all. But really what has solidified my understanding of fixing, peacekeeping, controlling has been ending the 33-year-long marriage in 2023. It's so, it's a lot to talk about. I can feel my head kind of spinning with getting the dates right and getting the things. It's very emotional, but it's also exciting because the newfound freedom from releasing that habit, not only from over-apologizing like we talked about last week, but really releasing the idea that this is my responsibility to begin with. And I can actually just start to let go and be me and allow the people in my life who support me. And, you know, we say, choose people who choose you, setting the boundaries that are necessary, but also feeling like the world's not going to come to an end or my life is going to become even worse if I don't control things. I realize the more freedom that I can feel from just living with some sense of ease. And so the big thing that I want to share today that we'll talk about is how much energy and how much it affected my emotional wellness and how much it affected my health, physical health. And I think that was never more prominent than this past, the fall of 2024, when I was going through all those stomach issues, colitis, and all of the things that were happening inside of me. And as I've emerged through that here now in 2025, it feels so, my life feels so much lighter. And I get what Scott Peck was saying even more deeply, that when I realize that life is going to be difficult and that I don't have to control everything and that I don't have to walk on eggshells. I don't have to keep the peace. I don't have to, you know, apologize all of the time. I don't have to be hyper-vigilant about what to do, what to say, who I'm with, how's it going to be, what's going to happen. I can actually just settle into being me and feeling the freedom that comes from allowing life to unfold, knowing that I have the strength and the confidence to be able to handle it.
And that is freeing.
Incredibly freeing. I don't even think I realized how much, you know, as much as I've been practicing for 40 plus years and so much has come out of that, obviously. And my life is so amazing and rich and all the things that I've learned and grown and all of the things, but to also now at 68 years old, having gone through this huge divorce, feeling even more free, feeling more at ease, feeling more like myself, uncovering more about myself, understanding a lot of the things that you went through in the 33 years of your 39-year-old life. It's just so unbelievable how we never stop learning. We never stop growing. We never stop becoming aware because there have been times when I thought, oh, I got this now. I'm good to go. So I don't want to say we're not ever good to go, but we're always going to be open to learning and getting a little bit deeper into what's going to actually set us free. And I believe setting me free means being exactly who I am in any moment of any given day.
And not being afraid.
And not being afraid and thinking that I have to control or that I have to make a situation work. And there's a various amount of reasons why we do that. People pleasing. We don't want to rock the boat. We don't want people to not like us. All the things. Or we don't want to cause any trauma or chaos or dysfunction. So I feel like in saying all of this, I have released so much more of maybe the unresolved or unknowing fear that I may have had inside of me.
Yeah, which is huge. It, I mean, you often say that this work is like peeling away the layers of an onion. And, you know, you start on the outside and it's layer after layer after layer. And sometimes you think you've gotten to the center, but there's another layer. And I think this conversation in this context for you is just one more layer where it's not bad. It's not like the work hasn't been good enough, but it's just sometimes you don't realize that this dynamic of monitoring emotions and being the fixer and being the peacekeeper underneath it is fear. And I know so often lately in these conversations with you, Mom, you've really identified that so many of these behaviors, the apologizing, emotional monitoring, so many other things are all tied to fear. And so many habits are rooted in fear, you know, different kinds of fear, but fear. And so it's interesting to think about it from that lens, but also it's not easy. It's sometimes painful, sometimes emotional, sometimes it's really hard to get to that root. So again, you know, be gentle with yourself if this conversation resonates with you, and just let yourself kind of continue to peel back the layers, knowing like you don't just rip apart an onion, you're gentle with it. So what's interesting for me when we were chatting about this before, did you want to say something?
I was just going to say one thing that it's been so eye-opening for me about fear. I have always said that I believe fear is at the root of every single emotion we have. A negative emotion, obviously not the positive ones, but fear is at the root of everything. If we're feeling people pleasing, it's just always for me, anger, all the things. It's always been fear that's been at the root for every single thing that I've discovered about myself. Mm-hmm. But I have to say, it's been shocking to me over these past, you know, year or so in coming out of that divorce. It's been shocking to me because I've never considered myself a fearful person. I've always,
right, you know, and I wouldn't either.
I always dive right in. I've never held back in what it is that I think I need to do. I'm an activist. I like to say what I think and all those things. But in this introspection, sorry, I didn't want to derail your thoughts. I've uncovered within myself that just the idea of needing to keep peace, just the idea of needing to walk on water, just even the idea of
walk on water.
You know, I mean,
Jesus,
treading water.
I love it.
Just the idea of all of that has created so much, as I've reflected, so much self-doubt or confusion, but I've thought of myself as such a confident, you know, really, really grounded person. So it's kind of insidious, and it's really sometimes not very obvious.
For sure.
In these little ways that seem small and that aren't very obvious, but this has been huge for me because I can't remember the last time except when I came out of treatment in such a major way where I have felt like I can take a really deep breath and feel, wow, I am really free because I've understood this idea of me needing to fix and keep the peace, but also rooted in this idea of control because I don't want to have to face, or I don't want to have to make a change maybe. So anyway, we'll uncover this in this conversation, but it's been interesting for me to see what were the tentacles of this idea of this particular fear.
For sure. And it is all different kinds of fear, but nonetheless fear at the root of it. And it's not easy to face fear, as we know.
And I didn't even know it was fear, but it's really interesting to call it out by name.
Yeah, because reiterating what you said, if you had asked me to define you or describe you or display your emotions, like fear would not ever be any of the top descriptors that I would use for you. So you coming to fear, I think, is really powerful for you and for our relationship and, of course, for the podcast, for these conversations. So when we first started to talk about this and talk about emotional monitoring, because, okay, where emotional monitoring comes from, you know, like we said, it can stem from being in toxic dynamics in your childhood, dysfunction, emotional abuse, things like that, to where you pick up the need to feel like you have to be the fixer, be the people pleaser, be the one that steps in and tries to keep the peace. And even, which is what we're going to talk about here, be the person who can intercept in tricky conversations or dynamics to where the perpetrator, for lack of a better word, or for the person that's being unruly or difficult, never has to suffer the consequences of their bad behavior. And that's something that you and I collectively, Mom, in our family dynamic, but also in our own personal lives, really suffered from and had to work through within these past 33 years. And I never really realized just how wearing and confusing and draining it was. And even just looking back on my life and my relationships and just my outlook in general, it's wild and eye-opening to see just how impactful this dynamic can be on your life. And so for me in my personal experience, Mom, and then I'll let you chime in as someone who was also present to this. I always felt like I had to be on guard to, again, intercept or to chime into a conversation with your ex-husband, especially because I knew that there was always a possibility of inappropriateness, of jokes at someone's expense, of rudeness, of disrespect, of all of those really, really, really uncomfortable dynamics. And so it came to me right before we started recording today that back when I was in high school, I very rarely wanted to invite my girlfriends over, and even just for casual visits, or if they wanted to come over, I always kind of felt a little like nervous or anxious about it, because they would say to me sometimes, oh, I don't think he likes me very much, or, oh, I came in and he just totally ignored me. Like, did I do something wrong? Or, oh, he made this comment and what did I do? And over time I picked up that like either I had to just be so on guard so that if it happened in the moment, I could chime in and say something or just not have them over at all, because I didn't want them to feel like they had done something wrong. And I even remember saying to him, like, you know, this person just came over and they tried to say hi to you and you just totally ignored them and they think that you hate them. Like, what is that about? And he'd be like, what do you mean? I didn't do that. I love that person. I always am so kind to them. Why would they ever think that? I am just, that is insane to me. If I didn't say hi to them, I must not have heard them. Maybe they didn't talk loud enough, which, you know, is, as I reflect back, a gaslighting technique, because we all saw it. And so I paint this picture because, again, as I've been reflecting in this moment in time, that greatly impacted my relationship with my friends. I was hesitant to have them over, to which maybe they started to take it personally, like, why doesn't she want us to come over? Does she not like us? I was always in my head about it. I was always nervous about it. And that's just one dynamic. But as you can see, if you're someone who feels like they have to over-explain someone's behavior or try and chime in to intercept a rude comment or a disrespectful comment, you're going to feel exhausted and confused and just totally disconnected from yourself, really, because it's almost like you're living through that other person's life rather than your own.
That is powerful, Michelle. And I think that's why this conversation we're having today, because these are emotions and these are things that we're doing and feeling as someone who was constantly emotionally monitoring another human being that are so insidious. Like I don't even know if I even knew the term emotional monitoring at all.
No, we just learned it recently, yeah.
But also what I want to say is it's when I read the definition of all of it, it fit my relationship in this marriage for 33 years.
Yeah.
And that's why I feel so compelled to talk about it on this episode. And I'm so thrilled that we are, because I don't know if you can actually identify with it until you actually identify with it. It's almost like a light bulb went off in my head.
Yeah.
I don't know if I actually realized this is what I was doing because I was so caught up in it. And one of the things I was thinking and feeling when you were saying that about your friends, also your friends, for them to just say to you,
yeah,
Michelle, did I do something wrong or whatever it was? They're also like, you can feel the energy when you walk in the room like this. So it's so insidious. I like to use that word, this
for sure.
Thing, because when you think about, as I was listening to you and our conversations that we've had about this a lot in the past few months, you know, you're trying to predict emotions. As you said, you're not even living in your own emotions and your own feelings. You're trying to predict what their words are and gestures and what they're going to say. And you're constantly checking
you're
in.
You're trying to be like a predict the future.
Yeah. You just want, you
Why
want to
can't
mitigate
I think of that word.
Well, you want to mitigate. You
yeah.
You're on guard. I want to mitigate any terrible thing that could happen between the time my friends come or the time that they leave so that we can all have a good time. So imagine how much energy that takes away from you having a fun time with your friends. Mm-hmm. Because then you're actually always checking as the wife or as the partner mm-hmm. or as the dear, dear friend. It can go across all relationships. I was constantly checking, are you mad at me? Because I could feel the energy like something was up.
And then of course, sorry not to interrupt, but then you get the apologies.
And then like you get the apologies.
We talked about last week. Yes. So you can see it's like they're all connected. It all is like a vicious cycle.
Well, that's what I was just going to go on to say, apologizing unnecessarily.
Yeah.
When you think your partner's upset or when you think your husband or whoever it is upset, you're like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. Did I do anything wrong? Mm-hmm. You know, and then you're looking, if that isn't the case, then you're kind of looking for the negative, looking out for the signs that they're angry or unhappy or upset. Or if they are, or if something has happened, you're replaying a conversation in your head all the time, trying to figure out why they are upset because it doesn't relate to you in many ways. You don't feel like, well, why are they upset? I didn't do anything wrong, but you feel like you did something wrong.
Right.
And you know, you're always walking on eggshells, which we talked about. It's so crazy. And I think two of the biggest things that has come out of this for me is I felt like it was my job. I truly felt like it's my job to make sure that my partner, husband, friend, or whoever it is that I feel this way about in any given situation is happy or calm or not stressed or not upset. And I'm having all these things going on inside of me that I was not even aware of because I thought it was my job.
Well, and also you thought if you could keep him happy, appeased, even keeled, then everything would be easier. People would be happier. You would be happier because then you're not trying to be on cleanup duty.
Yes.
I feel like you and I always felt like we were on cleanup duty, if not together, but separately in different situations and different dynamics. Like it was always about how to sweep up the mess that this person left in his wake. Remember when we told you about True Diagnostics True Age Test? Well, we've got more details about this cutting-edge way to measure your biological age because it's seriously so cool and incredibly insightful. My mom and I took the test and we absolutely loved learning more about our biological age, our health, and just getting the data so that we can make better choices to improve our health. True Age analyzes hundreds of thousands of markers on your DNA to reveal your true biological age and how fast you're aging compared to others. It tells you how fast 11 key organ systems are aging, and you get a breakdown of 75 plus key longevity biomarkers with things like metabolic health, immune response, and even risk factors for certain conditions. TrueAge was developed by doctors and scientists from Yale, Harvard, and Duke, drawing on one of the world's largest DNA databases so that you know these insights are backed by serious science, which of course we love. Along with your results, you'll receive personalized recommendations to help you improve your numbers and even potentially reverse your biological age over time. The best part, it's easy and convenient. The TrueAge test is done at home, so no doctor visit or big needles required, which is amazing. You send off your sample in a prepaid package, and in about 2 to 3 weeks, you'll get your detailed online report about your aging and health, fast and hassle-free. So if you're serious about longevity or just curious about what your body's real age is, head over to truediagnostic.com and use our code BARBKNOWSBEST to get 20% off your entire order. This is your chance to take control of your aging and make every year count more for your health. Visit truediagnostic.com and use BARBKNOWSBEST at checkout to get 20% off. Feeling healthy, energized, and good about ourselves from the inside out are things that we all desire, but don't always know how to put it into practice. I know firsthand on my own health journey, I've often felt frustrated, confused, and overwhelmed about what to trust, what to believe, and what to do to optimize my health. I've often felt like I've been doing everything right, eating well, exercising, and yet still not experiencing the life that I'm looking for. My energy's been low. I've had mood swings, I've had brain fog, and I've been wondering, where am I going wrong? Which is where Happy Mammoth comes in. I know firsthand how much stress can mess with your hormones and how much hormones can impact our daily health. Happy Mammoth offers a free 2-minute quiz that can help you uncover the root cause of your hormonal symptoms. It's super easy. You just answer a few questions about what you're going through and where you're at in life. And the best part, after taking the quiz, you'll get a personalized recommendation to help balance your hormones and start feeling better. I took the hormone quiz and I absolutely loved learning more about the insights, about the information, about where I'm at now in my life and what I could be doing to help optimize my health and balance my hormones. Happy Mammoth is a company that created Hormone Harmony and is dedicated to making women's lives easier. And that means using science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and it shows. Happy Mammoth offers a range of products designed to help you feel like yourself again. And with personalized recommendations from the quiz, you'll know exactly where to start. So ready to start feeling like yourself again? Head over to happymammoth.com and take their free 2-minute hormone quiz today and find the ultimate answer to your stubborn hormonal issues. And for a limited time, you'll also get 15% off your entire first order with our code BARBKNOWSBEST at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code BARBKNOWSBEST for 15% off today.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out: uncertainty, self-doubt, stressing about not knowing where to start. In: plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out: word art. Sorry, live, laugh, lovers. In: knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
And what I want to say about all of this is, if, especially if you're a woman, what I want to say is, if you're feeling like this fits in your life, just really be kind and gentle with yourself and have grace with yourself and understand that if you weren't aware of it before, or if it fits and you don't know what to do, this is all normal. This is all, like I say normal, maybe that isn't the right, natural. This is just the unfolding of it. I had no idea. And I know, you know, as you and I share more and more, Michelle, and we're in the process of writing some of our experiences in our lives, and, you know, maybe even coming out with some kind of a joint memoir.
Ooh.
As we've been exploring this, it can go where you just feel like this is my job, as I said, and like, this is all going to be okay. And let me just keep going, 'cause I don't know what to do differently. And then, of course, that idea, okay, keep the peace, because I don't want to disrupt anything of the good that might be happening in my life. So it just gets so enmeshed.
Mm-hmm.
It's so hard to decipher, and it's so hard to even acknowledge it. Because once you acknowledge it, because I'm a believer, once you know something, you can never unknow it.
Right.
And so just be gentle. And this really came to light for me. Here's my personal example, which started ending all of this. And I think it was like 2018 or 19 before the pandemic hit. One of my dearest and closest friends' daughters was getting married,
mm-hmm.
and we were going to a wedding in Hawaii.
Yeah.
And you and I were so excited because your dad, that was one of the last trips you took to Hawaii, was with your dad before he passed away. And
yeah, he really loved it there.
Yeah.
So I had always equated that place with him.
Yeah. And we were so excited to go and looking forward to it. And we love our friends, and we were so excited that she was getting married and all of that. So I asked my husband at the time, my ex-husband, I said, so we're all going to go to, you know, Hawaii for the wedding and all of that. So I got all the airline tickets and stuff. But then once we decided to go, it was such heavy duty, I'm on guard inside of me. Like, I knew that it was our friends, yours and mine.
Right. He didn't really know anybody.
He didn't really know a whole lot of people, but he did know the people, the mother and the father and all of that kind of stuff. So I just knew, ooh, I have to start now planning.
But it wasn't like his crowd where he felt comfortable.
Right,
it
right.
was more us.
He was
going to
have to
do
it.
And he was going to be kind of like the third wheel, where his personality is very much wanting to be the center and everyone else. So
yes,
I'm sure he knew that going in, like,
yeah,
these are your people.
Yeah. So I was on guard the minute we all said yes and got the tickets and all that. So fast forward, I would say probably several weeks before we actually left, I was just feeling so much tension and feeling so much like this
anxiety.
Is not going to go well. And anxiety. Yes. Anxiety.
Because it was a long trip, obviously, from where we live, but the whole it was a long week of events and things like that. So it wasn't going to be a quick one night in, one night out.
Right.
And which is even worse.
Well, and it was going to be fun. You and I were really looking forward to it. And I was starting to equate, how am I going to manage his emotions and the whole thing about him? And then I also, though, did want to have fun. And I wanted to enjoy your company and our friend's company. So I got the courage and I said, look, if you would like to not go, I would certainly understand, since, you know, what you just said, Michelle, since you're not going to know a lot of the people and all that. And he jumped at the chance. He said, you know, thank you for that. I would rather not go. And so that, in that moment, when he said that, and I canceled his ticket and did all of the things that needed to get done, I felt such relief.
Right.
I felt like, oh my gosh, thank you, Barbara. Thanks for stepping up. Oh my gosh, I'm so happy. This is all good. And that was really the unlocking of the awareness for me.
And I could feel it within you.
Well, we had such a great time. We enjoyed it so much. We had so much fun. And that was really unlocking the awareness in me that this is not working. I can't live like this anymore. And this is not how a relationship is supposed to be. And there was so many other things leading up, you know, which
of course
alluded to, and or we've talked about, not alluded to, we've talked about, and so much more to come. But it was really the opening. So the idea that you can start to release this dynamic within yourself by honoring the freedom that you feel when you kind of go against it. When you have the courage in any given moment in life where you actually say, you know, maybe it's okay if you don't want to do this, or it's okay, I'm going to do it. I don't even know exactly what scenario that could look like in your lives. But I know for me, it was the first crack in the door of my awareness and my ability to be able to say, I can't live like this anymore.
Yeah. And it's having that awareness in those instances, even though it's painful, even though it took a lot of courage, I think, for you to say to him, hey, if you don't want to go, you don't have to go. And I even remember there was some back and forth where then he was like, well, but is it going to be a problem? Like, you know, I think he tried to push back and make it complicated, even though he was happy to be let off the hook. But I do remember when it was confirmed that he wasn't coming, the relief I felt in you of just like, okay, you get time off, basically. You're off the hook for the next week or so, for however long that trip was. And it's these kinds of things where you can start to notice like, wait, should I be feeling this way in my life, where I'm breathing a sigh of relief that this person who is like a huge chunk of my life isn't coming, that I finally feel at peace, that I can feel a sense of freedom, that I can have fun. I can do what I want to. I don't feel like I have to be on guard. I can just approach each moment, each situation as it comes. And I don't have to, you know, constantly scan the room, be listening to conversations, and just, you know, overextending in that way to keep the peace. And so, of course, you know, I'll say, and we say often on the show, like, we're not perfect. Our relationship isn't perfect. We're not like the gold standard of how we've sorted things out. And so even though that situation happened and it was a huge awakening for both of us, like, it was still many years down the road before, you know, things really changed and decisions were made. And so it's not like black and white in the sense where it happens and you're done. You know, you take in the information and you use it as data, like you say, Mom, like the scientist of your life, you use it as clues, and you let it inform your decisions and your decision-making processes moving forward, so that you know, like, when it is time to maybe make a decision or make a huge life change, you feel really confident in your choices and not like it's knee-jerk reactions.
Yes. I love that, Michelle. And it doesn't mean that you have to end your relationship or you have to have that ultimate ending of something. But what it does mean for me when I think about it, you know, as I said, so much more went into the ending of my marriage, not just that.
Of course.
But this is a piece of it that we're sharing today that, you know, it doesn't mean the relationship has to end, but it does mean, though, that maybe little by little by little, we can start to look at, am I being so hypervigilant, or am I feeling like I'm being constrained, or am I feeling emotionally exhausted? Mm-hmm. These are the things that I started to really notice, especially when we were in Hawaii, just the idea of the relaxation of it and just the thought of it, you know, and anxiety, as you were saying, Michelle, and insecurity a little bit about, oh my gosh, can I actually do this? And, you know, suppressing my own emotions, you know, not really being able to mm-hmm. freely talk about that. And I think the biggest thing that's come to me, for me, and that's where I feel like the door can kind of open a little bit in everyone's life, where you can actually ask yourself, am I actually losing my own authenticity? Mm-hmm. Am I actually giving up who I am totally? Of course, we're going to compromise in relationships, but am I actually just losing who I am? and my needs or my feelings or my thoughts or my desires and my happiness. When I think about the idea of feeling like the peacekeeper, feeling like the fixer, you know, feeling like I had to emotionally monitor, especially this relationship, it was so draining that I really had lost myself in many, many ways of not who I am in terms of the desires of the kind of life, because I was right. living my life and I was doing all the amazing work that I'm doing now. But I felt like I had to also monitor this one part of my life because I wasn't sure where I needed to go with it, actually.
Well, it's like you're taking on someone else's life.
Yeah, and I wasn't
sure. And taking on responsibility for their behaviors and emotions.
Definitely.
And energy.
But it's kind of like when I think about it and talk about it even right now, it was almost like living two separate lives in that reality that I was really authentic to myself and all the work and everything that I was doing with everyone else in the world
right.
and with my own life. But then when I entered back into my marriage, it was like, oh, that's right. These are the rules in the marriage. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't until I wanted to make sure that my whole life was integrated into one whole that I started to recognize. And then all the other things that went along with the breakup, recognize that, wow, it is okay to end something if it's necessary to keep me being a whole person. And I'm imagining he's a whole person now as well. Mm-hmm. I don't know. We don't have any contact anymore. But I think it's just a little bit of the crack of the door opening just to be able to kind of look at where are some small ways that you can regain your feeling of responsibility for yourself and no one else.
Absolutely. And a piece that you just said that really came to me as you were talking was that we often go into emotional monitoring or being on that high alert peacekeeper role to try and mitigate anxiety, to try and mitigate stressful situations, and to try and keep the peace, like we've said. But in my experience, and I know in your experience too, Mom, this behavior doesn't ever actually get rid of our anxiety. It just almost adds to it because you're just like, I know I said that we're peeling away the layers of the onion, but these behaviors kind of stack on more layers to where it's actually doing the opposite of what you hope it would, because you've never achieved the goal. You've never really created peace. You're just kind of band-aiding that person or shielding that person from everything else, but they're keeping on like, and they're not ever realizing that their reaction or their behaviors have that reaction or that consequence or that toll. And even if they are aware, maybe they don't even care. Like when I said to him, my friends think you hate them and they're a little scared of you. Like they said scared. And I remember when I said, my friends are scared of you. And he was like, that's impossible. How could anybody be scared of me? I'm like, well, actually everyone is scared of you because you're super intimidating and never really warm and kind. And, you know, that didn't even sink in. And I think, you know, that's a whole other conversation of personality disorders. And, you know, most people, I think if they were told that they're intimidating and scary, they would really want to take in that information to make changes. But obviously that wasn't the case with this person. But it's so powerful to let people have have their own consequences. You know, yeah, I spent so many years of my life really trying to shield that, but now I'm in this phase, you know, especially since we don't really have relationships with this person, but let people think he's scary. Let him deal with that. If people think he's rude or disrespectful or not kind, I don't have to worry about that. That's his own problem. And now I've released, and I know that this was a huge piece for you too, Mom, the fear or the anxiety of how that reflects on me. Because I think that is the last piece of why we tend to emotionally monitor, because we also have this anxiety of other people's behaviors and emotions and words, how they reflect on us.
That's so true,
and
Michelle.
You know, we talk about the company you keep. So it's valid, but I know that was a huge weight on both of us.
It's so true. It's really, listening to you speak and thinking about what all I've shared today, It's such a cycle. It's a vicious cycle.
Cycle breaking.
Exactly. It's one of those things that takes time to cycle break because it really is so, I don't know, where it's entrenched in so many layers we talk about. And, you know, we don't realize that it's actually, I think what I didn't realize, because I am so strong and deep in my practice and so strong and deep in everything that I do to keep myself healthy, physically, mentally, spiritually, all the things. It's not like I abandon all of my life and all of my work, but it's so weird of when I finally got divorced, how free that I felt. And oh my gosh, I no longer am responsible for this whole person, which was huge. I didn't realize how huge it was and how much energy I have now and how much, I don't know, just simple ease in my life.
Yeah.
You know, my practice is still the same and I'm doing all the things, but at such a different level because I feel such at ease already. I'm not needing to manage the unhealthiness that was there that I didn't realize how unhealthy it was. Even though I knew how unhealthy it was, I thought I had the power to keep it from affecting me deeply until I had that flare up in the fall of 2024 of colitis, stomach issues. And I think, didn't you come into my room and say,
yeah,
what did you say again?
What is happening that you just can't stomach or something like that? What's happening in your life that you can't digest?
Yes, exactly.
You know, like what's going on that could be contributing to those issues?
My digestion. Yeah. My digestion issues. Cause I knew I was eating fine.
It was a curious situation for you because
No, I knew that it wasn't necessarily food related. It wasn't like I don't eat a lot of toxic food. I'm mindful of my eating and all of that. Not that I don't, you know, binge and stuff from time to time or have, you know, candy or whatever, but I'm just more mindful of my eating. I always have been since I've been in treatment,
of course.
But when you walked in the room and said that, Mom, what is it about life right now that you're having trouble digesting? It was this. It was the beginning of the breakthrough of this idea that of starting to cultivate the awareness of the unhealthy way that all unfolded in my 33-year marriage, but also the unhealthy way that where was it also kind of, you know, overflowing maybe in other places of my life where I felt like I needed to fix something or I felt like I needed to be the peacekeeper or I felt like I needed to be responsible. And I think it just was so enlightening for me to look at the idea that if we can start to cultivate just the tiny bit of awareness of that we're trying to keep peace or we're trying to fix, you know, just even if you just spend a day, if you spend a whole day thinking about all the relationships in your life and where are you starting to feel like you have to fix it or you have to be the fixer, you know, or you have to keep the peace or you can't actually be exactly who you are, or say something in a very kind, loving way.
Or apologizing, walking on eggshells.
Yes.
Maybe saying, like giving small lies or half truths to not, you know, ruffle any feathers.
I love that you just said that because what came to me so much over the past few months and this past, you know, couple of years since the divorce is the truth truly will set you free. Even the small little lies that you just said, Michelle, it keeps us from actually knowing what is our responsibility in life. Like what am I responsible for?
Right.
Who am I responsible for? And once we can kind of, or once we actually know the answer to that question, I'm not responsible for anyone. Now, if I'm a mother with a young child and all of that, of course I am.
Right.
I'm not talking about those responsibilities as a mother and a father and family members and all of that that we're responsible for in terms of being caring and loving and kind and all of the things that we can do. But are we actually responsible for other people's behaviors as adults, other people's well-being? You know, are we actually responsible for that? And it has set me very free to know that I am not responsible for anyone's behavior or anyone's life. And it's actually set me free to know that I'm not responsible for you either, Michelle.
Yeah.
You know, I think it overflowed into some of those, oh my gosh, you know, I have to also, you know, do the things that I need to do as a mother.
And that's where codependency and enmeshment come in.
Yes. Thank you.
That cycle then steps in where, you know, it comes from a good place, but it's overstepping.
It's dysfunctional.
Yeah.
And it's actually not breaking the cycle that really one of the greatest blessings we have as humans is that we are in charge of our own lives.
Right.
We end up ultimately, we are responsible for ourselves. We are responsible for our behavior. We are the ones that have 100% control of how we respond to everything in life. But we have zero control over what life is going to present to us at any given moment. And I think once we stop feeling like that we have control over what life sends us and we've got to monitor it, we've got to be there for it. We have to be vigilant toward it. We have to know what to do in every moment so we can keep it from happening. Sometimes we think we can. Mm-hmm. It just takes up our lives. It takes up so much energy.
Yeah,
I know people say to me often in the past, 6 months especially, oh my gosh, Barb, you look so young.
Yep.
You look so healthy.
Your skin is glowing.
You look so happy. What are you doing? And really all I can say mostly for the most part is what I'm doing is being me.
Yeah.
I don't feel like I have to actually be responsible or control. And when that little idea or when that controlling head rears its, negative
rears
thoughts.
Rears its ugly
and,
head.
Yeah. In my mind, I'll say, wait a minute, not my job.
Yeah.
I got a full-time job taking care of myself and making sure that I'm making the choices, standing up for the things that matter to me in my life and in the world. I don't have the desire or the responsibility to take on other people's lives.
Well, and that's the perfect shift or reframe to kind of close out this conversation is that, yes, emotional monitoring of others can be very unhealthy and exhausting and overwhelming. But, a great, what's the flip to that is to counteract it. I could not think of that word, is to start to tune back into your own emotions. Like, let the emotional monitoring come back into you. In these kinds of situations where you feel on high alert or stress, notice your feelings. Check in and name how you're feeling. What is this situation with this person making me feel? And what can you do with that? And, like we talk about so often, the power of the pause, taking space before you react, taking space before you do or say something. If it's your knee-jerk reaction to try and jump in and intercept something, can you pause and really ask yourself, is it my job to do this right now? Do I need to be doing this? And of course, if you have a therapist or a friend, a confidant that you can talk to about this, that can validate your experiences and say, hey, that's not your job. You don't need to take that on. Or your emotions here are valid, but you don't need to be having stress and anxiety about this. That's hugely important because we didn't really dive into this too much, but it's so easy in these kinds of toxic situations with people like this to feel like you're crazy or that you're wrong or that you're not really interpreting the situation correctly, because these types of people also tend to be charming, also tend to, sneak their way out of situations. Like I said, in this situation, he was like, that's not true. How could anyone ever think that about me? So
they're the problem. You're the problem.
You're the problem. So it's very easy to then also think, wait, I'm the only one that notices this. This is just me. So having a person that you can talk to who will, walk you through this or talk you through this and validate your experiences is also hugely important, because you can pick up these breadcrumbs of the situation and know that they're true and real, so that then when the time comes or when it feels appropriate for you, you can set a boundary or make a change or stand up for yourself or do something differently.
And I just want to say, we had several people in our lives all along the way that would say, oh my gosh, this must be really hard for you.
Yeah.
This must be really difficult. And I just want to close out my part of this by saying, this is not easy. I am 68 years old and just learning it and just really embracing it and so thrilled that I have the opportunity with the years that I have left to actually practice the idea that, to actually practice the teaching and the knowing that I am not responsible for other people's feelings and emotions and the way they present themselves in their lives. And what I've done, this is the affirmation I've been using lately, Michelle, and it's kind of a takeoff of something you had said often in your work. And I say this to myself, other people's actions and behaviors have other people's energies.
Right.
Stay in alignment, Barb, with your truth.
Yeah.
So whenever I start to feel like, ooh, I got to walk on eggshells here, I'm going to ask this person if they're mad at me, or, oh,
apologize.
I need to apologize. I need to over-apologize. Any of those things that we've talked about during this. And can I be responsible for another person's behaviors and actions? And can I actually mitigate it and change it? We can't.
Yeah.
So I say that other people's actions and behaviors have other people's energy. Stay in alignment with your own truth, Barb.
I love it.
And it just brings me right back to the present moment. And I really equate this with freedom. And I am so happy to be free of the, I don't know, the old myth that I had to be responsible for other people's behaviors and actions.
Absolutely.
So thank you so much, Michelle.
Thank you, Mom.
Thank you for always being vulnerable. And I want to thank our community again for this platform and for the ability to know that we can be who we are and we can be vulnerable. We can share our experiences in the deepest, deepest desire of hoping that some little thing that we said today will help you live the most, you know, extraordinary life that you deserve to live.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Mom, for sharing. And thanks for being open to having this conversation with me and with the show. And I hope that this conversation was helpful for everyone. We, you know that these dynamics can be tricky to navigate, but, you know, with awareness, with compassion, self-forgiveness, with grace, we can peel back those layers of the onion, like we said, and really get to the center of who we are from the inside out. So again, thanks, Mom. And thank you so much to our listeners for being a part of this community. We are so grateful for all of you. And we do have something exciting very soon on the horizon for you all that we have been working very hard on behind the scenes that you are about to learn a lot about very soon. So
we've been working so hard and thank goodness I have all of this energy now.
Exactly. Yes. So something very exciting is coming very soon. So stay tuned because we're so excited to share it with you. I know sometimes that's annoying to say, but we've been working and we think that you all are going to love this next chapter that we've been preparing for you all. So stay tuned for that. If you are loving the show, please make sure you're liked and subscribed to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts so that you're always up to date with each new episode as it drops. If you have questions, comments, concerns, make sure you're following us on social media at Peaceful Barb, at Michelle Maros, at Barb Knows Best Pod. That is always the best way to stay in touch. There are a couple links in our show notes for our Substacks, which also have some other fun information and lots of fun stuff going forward. Again, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes and Spotify and leave a review. It means a lot to us and it does help the show as well. Thank you so much again for listening. Thank you, Mom. And we will chat with you next week because as we know, Barb knows best. Bye.
Hi, I'm Kristen Bell. Carvana makes car buying easy. Isn't that right, hun? Dax? Dax?
Sorry. Did you know about this 7-day money-back guarantee?
A week to evaluate seat comfiness, you say?
A week of terrain tests? Yeah, I can test the brake pad resistance at variable speeds.
Make sure all the kids' stuff fits nicely.
Make sure our stuff fits nicely.
Oh, the...
Right. Still need to buy the car. Getting ahead of ourselves here.
Buy your car with Carvana today.